Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Text 27. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sitatta Patra Vajanayupaskrita. Vasuna varshay abhivarshita pati prashangavasa vanamalaya babho kano yata ko dupachapa vajyatai. As the Lord passed along the public road of Dwaraka, his head was protected from the sunshine by a white umbrella. White feathered fans moved in semicircles and showers of flowers fell upon the road. His yellow garments and garlands of flowers made it appear as if a dark cloud was surrounded simultaneously by sun, moon, lightning, and rainbows. Purport. The sun, moon, rainbow, and lightning do not appear in the sky simultaneously. When there is sun, the moonlight becomes insignificant. And if there are clouds and a rainbow, there is no manifestation of lightning. The Lord's bodily you is just like a new monsoon cloud. He is compared herein to the cloud. The white umbrella over his head is compared to the sun. The movement of the bunch hair fan of flukes is compared to the moon. The showers of flowers are compared to the stars. His yellow garments are compared to the rainbow. So all these activities of the firmament, being impossible simultaneous factors, cannot be adjusted by comparison. The adjustment is possible only when we think of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. The Lord is all-powerful, and in his presence anything impossible can be made possible by his inconceivable energy. By the situation created at the time of his passing on the roads of Dwarka was beautiful, but the situation created at the time of his passing on the roads of Dwarka was beautiful, cannot be compared to anything besides the description of natural phenomena. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Vilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Pancha kalpa taru bhyascha kripa shindu bhayebhacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we are still discussing the time. We're discussing Lord Krishna leaving Hastinapur and entering Dwarka. All this is happening at the time when Maharaj Prickett is in the womb of Uttara before her birth, before his birth, which will begin in chapter 12. I described that before. The sages asked these questions about the speakers and hearers of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the last question was about Maharaj Prickett, which brought us to the end of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where Krishna protected Maharaj Prickett in the womb. And then as the war ended, Krishna gradually left Hastinapur. He left gradually because of the intense attachment of the residents of his eternal associates for him. And then we saw Krishna entering into Dwarka. We've been studying that now. And we're seeing the spontaneous, the prema pumartha mahan, the goal, the greatest value of life is this love of Godhead. This is the priyojana. This is the goal. Srimad Bhagavatam discusses three subject matters. Sambandha Gyan, our relationship with Krishna. Abhideya Gyan, the knowledge of the activities in that relationship. And Priyojana Gyan, the goal of life. So here in the first canto, there is a preview of the 10th canto. All the subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's 10 subject matters. All the subject matters are described in all the cantos. But the beginning subject matters predominate at the beginning. And the later subject matters predominate at the end. So we'll also see the 10th subject of the Srimad Bhagavatam here also in the first canto, which is Ashraya, which means to discuss the personality, Prajendranandana Krishna. It's not actually Prajendranandana Krishna, but to describe the personality of Godhead Krishna as the ultimate shelter of the devotees and their loving sentiments for him. This is the goal of life, to attain this type of spontaneous affection that we saw in the residence of Hastinapur as Krishna was leaving Hastinapur, and which we are witnessing now as Krishna enters into Dwarka. So this is really what's being described here. The goal of life, which is to have our consciousness condensely fixed on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and his devotees. So we saw this mood of separation. By the residents of Dwarka, who had previous association with Krishna, there's different types of separation. Separation is a very intense expression of love. Because in the absence of the beloved, the object of love, that object of love goes deep within our heart. And there's a very intense meditation on the object of our love. And because Krishna is not different from his name, form, qualities, and activities, he's not a material person that is designated Sarvapati, Vinir Muktam, Tat Paratvain, and Nirmalam. He's not designated materially by a particular body in one place. He's not on the material. He's pervading everything. At the same time, he can personally appear wherever he wants in reciprocation to the love of his devotees. So Krishna is there in the intense thoughts of his devotees. It is not different from him. And therefore, sometimes Krishna apparently, in his manifest lila, separates himself from the devotees to intensify their loving sentiments. So we're seeing that in this chapter. And as Krishna is entering into the city of Dwarka, we're seeing that they have intense transcendental depression or dejection. And how the sound of Krishna's conch shell heralding his arrival pacifies the residents of Dwarka. We saw they offered very wonderful prayers expressing their mood of separation. Anyway, we can remember to so many expressions of the love. Even the prostitutes went out to greet him. Even they were devotees of the Lord. And we saw the image of his conch shell touched by his red lips, which indicated how things become awakened and spiritualized by the touch of Krishna. So by our ardent desire to have the association of Krishna, Krishna consciousness will awaken within our heart. Also, the sound of the conch shell, it was compared to the rising of the sun. When there's darkness or dejection, without the sun, there's darkness or dejection, and at dawn, and all of a sudden the spirits rise, the light comes. So similarly, in the association of Krishna, or the heralding of Krishna, or the hearing of the holy name of Krishna, the hopelessness of the material existence becomes eradicated. So we're appreciating and we're seeing how Krishna is coming into the city of Dwarka. And we also saw a description of Dwarka. And this theme will also be there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Wherever there is Krishna, there's... That was the conclusion. That was the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. Wherever there is Krishna, the supreme mystic, Yogeshwar, and wherever there is his devotee, Arjuna, the supreme, there's victory, morality, opulence. So when Krishna's touch is there, there's auspiciousness. And that is auspiciousness. Auspiciousness is reality. Reality is beautiful, and reality is Krishna. When you have transcendental knowledge, when you have the proper perspective, the proper vision, you'll understand that everything is Krishna or Krishna's energy. That's what we're doing by studying the Bhagavatam. When we study the Bhagavatam, what we do is we get a message which is truth. We get some type of understanding or message which is the absolute truth. And with that truth, we can look out in the world, we can look out on ourselves and actually see reality. And that reality is Krishna. And that is so enlivening to the self. So wherever there is Krishna, there's opulence, there's victory. So it describes his abode, where Narastakuakam, in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it was described that the spiritual abode, which is free from illusion, it's free from the desire for sense gratification, which covers Krishna's energy or covers the living entity from seeing Krishna. Narastakuakam, it's free from illusion. So we see the perfection of Krishna's abode, Dwarka, and how it's so pleasantly constructed, even aesthetically. The spiritual world is also aesthetic. The spiritual world is very, very beautiful, because it is controlled by Krishna's internal potency to facilitate his loving exchanges with his devotees. And that is the ultimate reality. Rasa vai saha. Krishna says, I am rasa. I am this intense affection between me and my devotees. That is his internal potency. So the spiritual world is constructed so beautifully and so pleasingly, so that all the residents are enlivened for devotional service to Krishna. I described before, just like in Krishna's rasa dance, it's described how the environment was so perfectly situated to create the most conducive atmosphere for the spiritual conjugal exchanges between Krishna and the gopis. This is Yoga Maya. I described even in a, before, I said this, gave this example before, even in a material sense, the atmosphere is connected to the relationship you want to have. Boy and girl meet, there's certain lights, there's certain music, certain place creates a romantic atmosphere. which facilitates their romantic exchanges. So the spiritual world is perfectly constructed aesthetically to facilitate the affectionate exchanges between Krishna and his devotees. So Dwarka was described, and I'm trying to remember that, yes, and the people there and the devotees and how everyone in the spiritual world had a particular service to perform in relationship to Krishna. And then Krishna entered. He entered the city. And he entered the city, and we see how the ladies of the respectable families, they went up on their palaces and their rooftops. It was so opulence there. And Mahotsava, Tad Ikshana Mahotsava, they had a Maha Utsav. Utsav means festival, Mahotsava. They had a great festival. And what was the great festival? Tad Ikshana, just to look upon Krishna. And that same Tad Ikshana Mahotsava is available in terms of the deity form, which is dressed so beautifully and attractively. So this was their Mahotsava. And their beauty, the beauty of Krishna was described. That the inhabitants of Dwarka, they would regularly look at Krishna. They would regularly look at Krishna, but they would never become satiated because Krishna has ecstatic, ever-increasing beauty. So as you mentioned, as you were reviewing these verses yesterday, the Bhagavatam puts you in the position of the devotee. As the residents of Dwarka are looking upon Krishna as he's entering, so we're also looking upon him. And this is what the Bhagavatam does. It enables us to stand in the perspective of the devotee and to appreciate their position and appreciate their love and also appreciate their viewpoint of Krishna. So we see his beauty, how he's so beautiful, and whatever beauty you seek is found within in Krishna. Everything about Krishna is so attractive and so beautiful. So his beauty has been described from the eyes of the residents of Dwarka, and specifically the ladies from the respectable families. And then we had this description today about the Lord's beautiful hue, which is like a monsoon cloud. This is a special color. If you look up during the rainy season, the cloud has a very beautiful blackish blue color. That's the color of Krishna. So the umbrella, you can imagine, the vision has to be there. Imagine Krishna walking into Dwarka. The Brahmins are surrounding him, chanting prayers. He's with his entourage. We saw all the residents went out to greet him. Or maybe that's coming up. I'm not sure. No, I think that Balaram, all important personalities, got up to meet him. And he's walking along the public road. Imagine that you were in Dwarka when Krishna actually came. And Krishna enters into Dwarka. So Sita Goswami is trying to explain this scene, but it's so hard to explain Krishna's beauty because it's something that's beyond our sensual and intellectual experience. So Prabhupada says, but the situation created passing on the roads of Dwarka was beautiful and could not be compared to anything besides the description of natural phenomena. And not only natural phenomena, but the inconceivable combination of natural phenomena. Because the sun and the moon are never in the sky at the same time. And the rainbow. You never have the sun, the moon, and the rainbow in the sky at the same time with a monsoon cloud. So this Prabhupada said in the purport, the adjustment is possible only when we think of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. Inconceivable potency of the Lord creates indescribable and inconceivable aesthetic, ecstatic, and beautiful situations. So we can see the Lord's you is like a monsoon cloud. Someone's holding an umbrella over his head. So that's like the sun. There's a chamara on either side. They're like the moon. He has a brilliant yellow garment, which is like the rainbow. So this adjustment is only conceived by the inconceivable potency of the Lord. Pravishtastu vriham pitro parishvokta samattavi pavande shirasa sapta devaki pramukha muda. After entering the house of his father, he was embraced by the mothers present, and the Lord offered his obeisances unto them by placing his head at their feet. The mothers were headed by Devaki, his real mother. So Krishna's father had 18 wives. But Krishna's Akila Rasamrita Murti, you can have so many wonderful, sweet relationships with Krishna. So there's many people that can take the position of his mother. If you aspire to become the father of Krishna, it's not that you aspire to become Nanda Maharaj, because that's almost like Mayavadi philosophy. But there are so many fathers, and there's so many, because all the elderly gopis and all the elderly gopis, they have the mood that Krishna is their son. Just like you can have a parental feeling for someone else's son. So there was this parental feeling for someone else's son. But in this case, with Krishna, he had so many mothers. All the wives of Vasudeva were his mother. And the culture, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he touches the feet of his parents. And as Krishna is all attracted, we can just imagine how much affection he drew from the hearts of his mother. And this is Krishna's enjoyment. Krishna is enjoying the affection of his devotees. And the affection of his devotees is his own pleasure potency, which enters into the hearts of his eternal associates. Any questions?
So, if we want to establish a transcendental relation, if we want to establish a transcendental relationship with Krishna, you just stated that if you had wanted to or had an attraction to a parental mood. But you can't be Nanda Maharaj. That's my one. So how is it then understood? We don't have an identity now in Krishna Lila, but we have a natural propensity to engage in a certain type of relationship with him. And when we get uncovered, we can start to act in that way.
We have an eternal relationship with Krishna. And by Krishna's mercy and by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and becoming purified, that relationship will gradually become uncovered. Is that clear?
Taputra mankamaropya sneha snuta payodara harsha vivalitatmana Sisi Chur Neta Jayalai.
The mothers, after embracing their son, sat him on their laps. Due to pure affection, milk sprang from their breasts. They were overwhelmed with delight, and tears from their eyes wetted the Lord. So this is an example of Vatsalya Ras. This gives you a little idea what rasa shastra is. This is rasa. This is perfected affection. The mothers, they're embracing their sons. That's called anubhav. And they sat him on their laps. Sneha snuta. Moistened by affection. Due to the pure affection, milk sprang from their breasts. This is another ecstatic feeling for Krishna's mother. Out of love, milk comes from her breast. So that's like an experience in itself, but it's an ecstatic experience of maternal affection. And they were overwhelmed with harsha. Harsha means happiness. So this is a vyabhichari bhav. So you can see how all the bhavas make the affection perfect. And also, they're seeing their son. So that's called vibhav. They see their son and his beautiful face, and that's called udipan. The technical terms are not important now, because I'm not explaining in such a technical way, but I'm trying to give the general understanding that this is what's perfect, and this is why the Bhagavatam is perfect. It's perfectly composed for each relationship with Krishna. And tears from their eyes wetted the Lord. That's called sattvika bhav. So when all these emotional experiences are proper, then you get this rasa, or this intensified affection, which Krishna can relish and enjoy. Because Krishna is also rasika. He's also a connoisseur. So this is perfect maternal affection.
Atavishatsvabhavanam sarvakamananutamam prasarayatra patninam sahasrani chashodasha.
Thereafter the Lord entered his palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. So now Krishna is going to enter to the palaces of his wives. 16,000 palaces. I believe in the previous chapter, the exalted position of Krishna's wives were described. Do you remember that? In the prayers of the ladies of Hastinapur. Remember in the previous chapter, he described the wives. Oh friends, just think of his wives, these are the ladies of Hastinapur, whose hands he has accepted, how they must have undergone vows, baths, fire sacrifices, and perfect worship of the Lord of the universe, to constantly relish now the nectar from his lips by kissing. The damsels of Rajabhumi would often faint just by expecting such favors. Even the gopis, because their relationship is parakya. That's very special. Describes their children and how they were captured by Bhamasura. And then the other 16,000, I think 100 were captured by Bhamasura. How Krishna freed them. Krishna accepted them. So there's all this glorification, so here also. And the purport describes the opulence, fully equipped palaces, every wife, palaces made from the best marble stone. I don't know if you know historically that they found the palace of Krishna in Dwarka, in the sea. archaeologically, they discovered the palace.
Pratyapatim prosya grihanupagatam talokya sanjata mano mahotsava utasturarat sahasasanasayat shakam vrita vridita lochananana lochananana.
The queens of Lord Krishna rejoiced within their minds to see their husband home after a long period abroad. The queens got up at once from their seats and meditations. As was socially customary, they covered their faces shyly and looked So this was the nature of the residence of Dwarka. Pure devotee cannot forget Krishna for a moment. So we can see what were they doing? They were meditating, and they got up immediately. They were sitting in meditation, and they got up, but also with their minds, because their minds was focused on Krishna within their heart, and now Krishna was there, the object of their love. So either in separation or union, they're always meditating on Krishna. And it says they looked at Krishna very coyly. So this is also a anubhav of the conjugal relationship. In other words, there's anubhav again means that in perfect affection there must be perfect actions to express love, which also are an emotional component of love. For example, we see that the mothers, they milk came from their breasts, and they embraced their son, they put him on their lap, and they offered blessings. Those are the perfect actions of paternal affection. But here, we can see this is proper. Between man and woman, she looks shyly from the side of the sidelong glances when there's conjugal love. The love has to be expressed in some action. So this is also these corner of the eyes in an affectionate way. So Prabhupada in the purport talks about these palaces, that there were 16,108 palaces. And this is, and in each and every one of them, Krishna is simultaneously, is situated, but not individually. They're all full expansions of Krishna. I believe this is called Prakash. And then we have Balas expansion. Then it's like Balaram. There's some difference. But this is Krishna expanded as himself exactly. Prabhupada described that yogis can do it up to 8 times. You know, expand themselves. But even those expansions are not separate individuals. So they're each separate expansions of Krishna, which are Krishna. You can't distinguish between one and another. This is Krishna's mystic potency. And he not only has, it's not only amazing that he has 10,000 wives or 16,000 wives, but he has them in 16,000 palaces. And not only that, it's more amazing because when Narada went to Dwarka and he saw this, he said, "Aho, bata, ho, bata, how wonderful." Because in one palace, he saw Krishna sitting with his wife, another palace playing with his children, another palace doing something else. But more amazing, Krishna is in everyone individually in each palace. Not only 16,000 wives, not only 16,000 palaces, but he's there himself relating with those, with his devotees in 16,000 forms. So this is the inconceivable potency of Krishna. He's Yogeshwara. And he has inconceivable potency, so we should not be astonished, Prabhupada said, that Krishna has 16,000 one-head-weight wives. On the contrary, we should affirm that even if the Lord marries 16,000 million wives, he is not completely manifesting his unlimited and inexhaustible potency. So these are expansions of his own internal potency, and we should not be surprised. Now I'm going to read a little bit from the purport, because this describes, therefore, as soon as this describes the affection of the devotees for Krishna, the affection that we want. Therefore, as soon as the queen saw from a distance their husband, who was away from home for long periods due to the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they all arose from the slumber of meditation and prepared to receive their most beloved. According to Yajnavalkya's religious injunctions, a woman whose husband is away from home should not take part in any social functions, should not decorate her body, should not laugh, and should not go to any relative's house in any circumstance. This is the vow of the ladies whose husbands are away from home. At the same time, it is also enjoined that a wife should never present herself before the husband in unclean state. She must decorate herself with ornaments and good dress and should always be present before the husband in the happiest and joyous mood. The queens of Lord Krishna were all in meditation, thinking of the Lord's absence, and were always meditating upon him. The Lord's devotees cannot live for a moment without meditating on the Lord. And what to speak of the queens, who are all goddesses of fortune, incarnated as queens in the pastimes of the Lord at Dwarka. They can never be separated from the Lord either by presence or by trance. The gopis at Vrindavan could not forget the Lord when the Lord was away in the forest cowherding. When the Lord boy Krishna was absent from the village, the gopis at home used to worry about his traversing the rough ground with his soft lotus feet. The 10th canto is very, very beautiful verses, and they are impregnated with volumes of meaning. But the gopis would always meditate and worry about Krishna going barefoot. Krishna never wears shoes. Going barefoot in the forest and his feet and how he may be hurt. By thinking thus, they were sometimes overwhelmed in trance and mortified in heart. Such is the condition of the pure associates of the Lord. They were always in trance, and so the queens also were in trance during the absence of the Lord. Presently, having seen the Lord from a distance, they at once gave up all their engagements, including the vows of women, as described above. According to Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there was regular psychological reaction on the occasion. First of all, rising from their seats, although they wanted to see the Lord, they were deterred because of feminine shyness. But due to strong ecstasy, they overcame that stage of weakness and became caught up with the idea of embracing the Lord. And this thought factually made them unconscious of their surrounding environment. This prime state of ecstasy annihilated all other formalities and social conventions, and thus they escaped all stumbling blocks on the path of meeting the Lord. And that is the perfect stage of meeting the Lord of the soul, Sri Krishna. So that is the highest. When you have love for Krishna, you completely renounce. You're willing to give up anything. Even their natural feminine shyness, they had to overcome by their devotion. Tamatma jai drishta bir antaratmana taranta bhava parare bari patim
Rudanapyas Vavarambunetrayor Vilajatinam Briguvarya Vaklavat.
The insuperable ecstasy was so strong that the queens, who were shy, first embraced the Lord in the innermost recesses of their hearts. Then they embraced him visually. And then they sent their sons to embrace him, which is equal to a personal embracing. But a chief among the Brigus, although they tried to restrain their feelings, they have inadvertently shed tears. Same thing, the queen's ecstasy breaks their shyness. So these verses, now Krishna's beauty was described. Now that beauty, this term udipan means like lights, like something lights. So Krishna's beauty is a stimulus for the devotee's ecstatic love. And now we're seeing how their ecstatic love is rising within their hearts. And now the ecstatic love, it overcomes their shyness. And we can see their strong feelings of devotion for Krishna. And first, because of their culture, they embrace him visually. First, within the heart, they embrace Krishna. And that was their situation before, because Krishna was gone, Krishna was in their heart. Then they see Krishna, the object of their love is before them. And they embrace him within the heart, and then they embrace him visually, and then finally they send their sons to represent them. And then they become overwhelmed with ecstatic feelings. And their tears come from their eyes. The embrace of the eyes is more effective in the conjugal relation, and according to Sri Jiva Goswami, there is nothing wrong in such an exchange of feeling between husband and wife. Yadyapyasal parshvagato rahogatas tatapitasyangri yugam navam navam pade pade ka virameta tat padach chalapi yachtrir yajahati karachit. Although Lord Sri Krishna was constantly by their sides, as well as exclusively alone, his feet appeared to them to be newer and newer. The goddess of fortune, although by nature always restless and moving, could not quit the Lord's feet. So what women can be detached from those feet, having once taken the shelter of them? So Krishna's wives, the goddesses of fortune, are just expansions of Krishna's wives. It's the same person. The goddess of fortune. They expand into Lakshmi Devi in Vaikuntha. So this is describing this intense ecstatic love. They're so attracted to Krishna that they never get tired. They can never be separated. And every time they see him, it's navam navam. Pade pade, tatapi tasyangri yugam navam navam. Navam navam means it's newer and newer. The lotus feet of the Lord, it's newer and newer. And that's the symptom of prema bhakti. I described this before. It's called apurvam. Newer and newer. I've never seen. Because if it's not newer and newer, you become tired of something. Never become tired. Just as the sages of Namasharanya at the beginning said, what is that verse? We never become tired. Vayam natu vitriptyatma. We never become tired. Uttama shloka vartate, of the chanting about Krishna's glories. Yet shinvatam rasa jnanam swade swade pade pade. Again and again, where swade, you know, swade is like drava, semi-soft, solid, and easily. At every step, we never become tired. And here, the same thing is said here. Nava navam, pate pate. Nava navam, pate pate. Again and again. So this is the ecstatic feelings of the resonance of the queens for Krishna. But in the material world, the goddesses of fortune, they're called chanchala. They're flickering. They can never stay with anyone. If one has fortune in the material world, then that fortune is gone. Wealth is the representation of the goddess of fortune. And the goddess of fortune can never stay with one. In the material world, you're unfortunate and then you're fortunate. So if we're unfortunate, understand we'll be fortunate. And if we're fortunate, understand we'll be unfortunate. So the goddess of fortune in the material world cannot stay with anyone permanently, but in the spiritual world, they don't leave Krishna's lotus feet for a minute. So the question is, what women can be detached from the lotus feet of Krishna having once taken shelter of him?
Evam napanam shitabara janmanam akshohini bhi parivritya tejasam vidaya varam swasano yatanalam mito vateno parato narayuda.
The Lord was pacified after killing those kings who were burdensome to the earth. They were puffed up with their military strength, their horses, elephants, chariots, infantry, etc. He himself was not a party in the fight. He simply created hostility between the powerful administrators, and they fought amongst themselves. He was like the wind, which could cause friction between bamboos, and so sparks of fire. The point here is that Krishna is the supreme controller. Let's see. In the previous verses, it described Krishna's conjugal relations with his with the queens. You have to understand that there's great sages listening to this at Naimisharanya. And the path of salvation for going back to Godhead, this is a future purport, it always forbids the association of women. It's very, very strict. And when we read the culture, and when we see the women in Hastinapur and the women in Dwarka, there's part of this separation. And they're very shy. And they're separated from the Lord. They're separated, not from the Lord, but they're separated from, there's no mixing of the sexes. So these sages are in this culture of Vanashram Dharma, which forbids and restricts the association of women. So then, how can it be accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Prabhupada, the purport, said it was addicted to more than 16,000 women. It's bad to have unrestricted mixing with women, but Krishna has 16,000 women. He's addicted to them. He's attached to their love. He's controlled by their love. Prabhupada said this question may be reverently raised by inquisitive persons really anxious to know about the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. And to answer, this is text 36, and to answer such questions, the sages of Naimisharanya have discussed the transcendental character of the Lord in this and in the following verses. So Krishna is being controlled by his wives. But here he's going to be described as the supreme controller, and his sublime character is being described. And Bhurijan explained why these verses have to be described. He said, he quoted the verse, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. You know what that means? Atmavan Manyate Jagat. However you're thinking, you see the world. So because in our thinking, in our experience, the association with the unrestricted association with the opposite sex is mundane. So therefore we will project, after hearing of the Lord's conjugal dealings, we may project our own conceptions of them on the Lord, and therefore misunderstand the Supreme Lord's transcendental position. The example Borijan gave is how we see the world according to our conditioning. It's the story of a deaf man. He calls his wife, and his wife doesn't answer, and he keeps on screaming louder and louder, and then finally concludes that she's deaf and not answering him. But actually, he's deaf. So you tend to project your own conditioning on others. So similarly, after the Lord's conjugal dealings, so we won't understand. And to put our consciousness in the proper way, he describes the Lord's power. So he describes the Lord's appearance, basically, because, as you remember in the Krishna book, it's described, the first thing in the 10th canto is, once when the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of demoniac kings, Krishna appeared. So that's basically described in the purport, how the living entity gets puffed up, and he starts to exploit the material world, and then there's discrepancy in religion, dharmasya glanir, and then Krishna appears. This is a basic thing. That in the material world, just like there'll be, it describes here, he was like a wind which causes friction between bamboos and so sparks a fire. Krishna's always causing these wars by the movement of kala or time. And why? Because he's annihilating or removing the burden of demoniac forces, and he's establishing his devotees. And he comes sometimes to do it himself also. Also, yada yada hi dharmasya ghanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam tadatmanam. What is it? Sri Jamyaha. I forgot the exact verse. Whenever there is a discrepancy of religion, Krishna manifests and appears. So that's Krishna. He's the Supreme Lord. This is like Kala. He was like the wind which causes friction between bamboos and so sparks fire. Kunti Deva also described the Lord as eternal time, as equal to everyone, but dissensions among living beings are due to social intercourse. There's dissensions among the human beings, just like a forest fire for no reason. But it's actually Krishna's arrangement to purify the world of the burden of demoniac people. The same thing here. Prabhupada describes about God, he creates hostility between such unwanted administrators as the air creates fire in the forest by the friction of the bamboos. The fire in the forest takes place automatically by the force of the air. And similarly, the hostility between different groups of politicians take place by the unseen design of the Lord. The unwanted administrators, puffed up by false power and military strength, thus become engaged in fighting amongst themselves over ideological conflicts and so exhaust themselves of all power. The history of the world reflects this factual will of the Lord, and it will continue to be enacted until the living beings are attached to the service of the Lord. So when you're not attached to the service of the Lord, then you try to be the enjoyer and controller. And there's friction in the world until you surrender to Krishna. And therefore, Prabhupada says, this means that no one can establish peace and prosperity in the world by fruit of activities or by speculative philosophy, the only way is to surrender unto the Supreme Lord and thus become free from the illusion of the deluding energy. In other words, as long as you're under the deluding energy or Maya, you're going to act for sense gratification. You're going to be in illusion about the position of God, and you're going to try to establish your position in the world to exploit things and compete with other living entities. The natural nature of the material world is competition or envy to control and enjoy. And therefore there's conflict because so many different people are centering the world around their own selfish desires. But because they're sharing the environment, there's always struggle to control that environment according to one's own personal needs. This is why sometimes even man and wife or two people have conflict because they share the environment. And if they're self-centered and not dedicated to God, then there'll be a struggle over how to construct that environment for one's sense gratification. But because some of the environment is shared, there's a struggle for who's going to control. So unless one surrenders to the Supreme Lord, there can be no peace. Unless you put God in the center, there can be no peace. And you yourself cannot become free from the modes of material nature and the deluding energy that makes you feel, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Therefore, one has to surrender to cause peace. And these are subsidiary points. The main point now is that Sutta Goswami is going to explain Krishna's position. He's not mundane. Saeshanara lokesmin avitirna samaya reme stiratna kutashto bhagavan prakrito yata. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, appeared on this planet by his internal potency and enjoyed himself amongst competent women as if he were engaging in mundane affairs. So this is the problem. The problem is, again, you know, what Sutta Goswami is doing, he's speaking about Krishna's affairs, conjugal affairs with his queens. And as a good preacher, he's sensitive to the audience who, being sages and being within Vanashram Dharma, might project their own conception of the world on transcendence and see that as meant mundane. In other words, as a preacher, he's concerned not just that he speaks the truth, but the truth is understood. So he has to explain now, for the benefit of us and the sages of Namasharanya, how this is transcendental. Because relationships in the material world, we experience as mundane. So here it specifically says that the Lord, this is not mundane, but it's the Lord's internal potency. And we think it's mundane due to our own experience in the world with these relationships. Prabhupada gives some logic in the verses that you can read, the purports that you can read. He describes how the living entity seeks happiness, but is restricted in the material world. But even if he achieves happiness, he becomes frustrated with it and wants to become liberated. So what to speak of the Param Brahman, the Supreme Lord? Prabhupada says, certainly he does not seek happiness anywhere in the material world, nor can his paraphernalia of happiness be found in the material world. In other words, he's not seeking out mundane ladies and having relationships with them. This is by his internal potency. It has nothing to do with the material world. Udama Bhava Pushanamala Valguhasa
Unama Bhava Pishunama Laval Guhasa Vridavalokan Hito Madano Piyasam Samu Yachapa Majahat Pamadotamasta Yasyendriyam Primatitum Puhakai Nesheku.
Although the queen's beautiful smiles and furtive glances were all spotless and exciting, and although they could conquer Cupid himself by making him give up his bow in frustration, and although even the tolerant Shiva could fall victim to them, still, despite all their magical feats and attractions, they could not agitate the senses of the Lord. In other words, the Supreme Lord's attraction to his queens, he's even henpecked, it's described. His attraction and his subservience to his queens is not due to being subdued by lust. A man becomes controlled by a woman when he is attached to her for sense gratification. When a man has lust for a woman, that woman can control him in any way she wants. But here it's explained that potency of Cupid or lust, although it can control everyone within this world, it cannot control Krishna. Krishna is only controlled by his devotees' loving sentiments for them. Krishna does not want them for their material bodies or for sense gratification. He's attracted to them because of their loving relationship with him. The idea is that not that the Lord was in any way attracted to these women, but he was just approaching them. He was just reciprocating with their mood of deep service and love. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains this. This is because such was the beauty and attraction of the queens of Lord of Krishna. Their beauty was so great that Lord Shiva, who is considered the most tolerant, when he was struck by Cupid's arrow, he became mad after the Mohini incarnation of the Lord, which is an incarnation of the Lord as a beautiful woman. So Lord Shiva became bewildered. But Cupid himself was captured by he became bewildered by the goddesses of fortune. How powerful is their beauty? The Prabhupada says here, such was the beauty and attraction of the queens, yet they could not disturb the transcendental senses of the Lord. This is because the Lord is all perfect, Atmaram, or self-sufficient. He does not require anyone's extraneous help for his personal satisfaction. He's satisfied within himself. He does not need anything in the world. We need something. When we become attracted to a woman, it's because what we want from them is not within ourselves. But everything is within Krishna. So he's Atmarama. So there's no need for him to go outside of himself. He does not require anyone's extraneous help for his personal satisfaction. Therefore, the queens could not satisfy the Lord by their feminine attractiveness. But they satisfied him by their sincere affection and service. Only by unalloyed, transcendental loving service could they satisfy the Lord. And the Lord was pleased to treat them as wives in reciprocation. Thus being satisfied by their unalloyed service only, the Lord reciprocated the service just like a devout husband. Otherwise, he had no business becoming the husband of so many wives. He is the husband of everyone, but to one who accepts him as such, he reciprocates. His unalloyed affection for the Lord is never to be compared to mundane lust. It is purely transcendental, and the grave dealings with which the queens displayed in natural feminine ways We're also transcendental because the feelings were expressed at a transcendental ecstasy. Same point will be made till the end.
Tamayam manyate loko yushangam api shanginam atma upamyena manujam vyaprinvanam yato buddha.
Common materialistic conditioned souls speculate that the Lord is one of them. Out of their ignorance, they think the Lord is affected by matter, although he is unattached. So only less intelligent think that when it says a Buddha, no intelligence, ignorance. So only a less intelligent person thinks when the Lord appears, he is mundane, like us. But Prabhupada says in the purport, he displayed full-fledged divine potency in every field of activities. As already explained in the first verse, he is completely independent to act however he likes. When he descends on the material world, it's by his causeless mercy to different living beings. Where am I? He does so by his own potency. He is not subject to any condition of the material modes.
Ajopi san abhyatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim swamadishtaya sambhavam yatmamaya.
Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, still I appear in every millennium prakritim swam by my own nature, by my atmamaya, by my internal potency, by my own will. So he's detached from matter.
Etadishanamishasya prakriti stopitadhunai layujyate sitatmastayata buddhistarasaya.
This is the divinity of the personality of Godhead. He is not affected by the qualities of material nature, although he is in contact with them. Similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord do not become influenced by the material qualities. So not only is the Lord's dealings with the queens not material, but all his dealings are not material. And his exalted devotees' dealings are also transcendental. He's never, Prabhupada said, the answer is that the divinity of the personality of Godhead is never in contact with the qualities of material nature in any circumstance. Actually, he's in contact with such qualities because he is the ultimate source of everything, yet he is above the action of such qualities. And also the devotees, described the six Goswamis, they're neutral. They're not affected by the modes of material nature. We're not neutral. Passion comes, we become angry, may become lusty. Ignorance comes, we become tired. Someone says something to us, we become insulted. We're not neutral. But Krishna and his devotees, they're neutral to this world. They're not affected by beautiful women. Nandanamna janamna sundarim kavitam bhajagadish. Lord Chaitanya didn't want wealth, women, they're not affected. The great six Goswamis of Vrindavan all came from greatly rich and aristocratic families, but when they adopted the life of mendicants in Vrindavan, superficially they appeared to be in wretched conditions of life, but factually they were the richest of all in spiritual values. Such Mahabhagavas, or first grade devotees, although moving amongst men, are not contaminated by honor, insult, hunger or satisfaction, sleep or wakefulness, which are all resultant actions of the modes of material nature. They're not affected.
Tammanere balamudha stainam chanuvratam raha apramana vedo bhartu ishvaram matayo yata.
So here's the conclusion. The simple and delicate women truly thought that Lord Sri Krishna, their beloved husband, followed them and was dominated by them. They're unaware of the extent of the glories of their husbands, as the atheists are unaware of him as their supreme controller. So, they were unaware of the Lord's position so that they can relate to him spontaneously. If their sense that Krishna was God was too strong, then that would check their spontaneous feelings of love. And therefore, by the potency of yoga maya, they do not understand his position, although they fully relish and understand deeply his supreme, wonderful personality as he exchanges transcendental relations with them. So this is the purpose that Krishna is playing with his wives and coming under their control. Because by the potency of yoga maya, they've forgotten his position as the supreme controller and therefore are free to exchange spontaneous loving dealings with him. Okay, we'll end here. Any questions? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay.